Omigyanatimarandasya gananjana shalakaya taksurunmalitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupakadamayam dadati sapadantikam manchakalpa turubhyascha kripashindubhayebhacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. We should have regular classes again in both Jivadharma and the Bhagavatam. And it's quite a time to be here. We have so many groups coming. Now, Ananta Dev and Lalita Kishori, his wife, they're here. Rati Krishna, the facilitator of our program, Michael Chiregno, Janine comes on Monday, Alexandra Mogha, Dustin Horan and a group come, John Smritik, well, so many people are coming. It's just one group after another, Veer Bhattaram and his group, Raghunath and his group, Bryn and Saibel, and other people that are not familiar to anybody on the conference. So it's quite enlivening. Get a lot to share what I'm studying. Okay, you know, we got to catch up on this. And I'll just go really quickly that we're discussing Jiva Tattva and the enlightenment of the enlightenment of Vrajanath. I see I'm losing my voice. I don't even know if I can continue the class. But anyway, Tota, are you going to bring some tea? Okay, that'll help me. So we're discussing Jiva Tattva, and it was a very... Babaji Maharaj was answering all his questions. You know, including the question of, you know, the suffering, why God creates something with suffering. And one of the analogies was given was a prison house which gives suffering but has some good intention for it. And then Vrajanath became a little bit intrigued about the material world and asked about what kind of activities do they do. And he explained that there's actually two types of activities. One is for pleasure and one is to dispel the miseries that actually are a result of the pleasure. The type of pleasure which is selfish also causes misery. So basically, the material world is people perform selfish activities, and then they perform activities to counteract. I'm going to have to sip tea to keep on going. To counteract the misery that comes from the reactions to those activities. And then, you know, Vrajanath, because he was a logician, he's inquiring further if Maya's purpose would have been served if she'd only covered the jiva with the subtle body. And basically, Babaji explained, you know, well, Krishna has a system. And the system is the gross body is a product of the subtle body. And within a gross body, the subtle body can change. But then the subtle body will need a gross body to commensurate with its mind. This way, in God's arrangement, this subtle body and the gross body both have its functions. And then Vrajanath, inquiring further, wants to understand what's the relationship between karma and its fruits. And he mentions the Mimamsa school, which feel that karma or activity is absolute. And they're actually atheistic a bit. I don't think they have a vision of God. But Babaji quotes from the Shastra, and he quotes from the Shastra to actually explain that ultimately man proposes and God disposes. That actually, he quotes this way, Dashvatara Upanishads, the Rig Veda, the Madaka Upanishads, how God is witnessing the activities, and according to our desires, he enjoys the fruits of happiness and distress that Ishvara, or God, the Lord of Maya, awards according to the Jiva's activities. And that continues until the Jiva turns towards God. Liberation is when the Jiva turns towards God. And turning towards God means to worship God, because our separation from God is just a matter of consciousness. Because God is actually everywhere. You can't confine God to a material location. God is beyond time and space, so factually, he's everywhere. And by the proper consciousness, one can invoke God's presence, just like the story of Hiranyakashipu. Where is your God? And Prahlad said, he's everywhere. And he said, in this pillar. And then to satisfy his devotee, God manifests there. But we can't confine God to a location that we could ever travel to God in material space. It's another dimension, which is beyond time and space. Time and space can't oppress God or limit God as it does us. So God is actually simultaneously present in all aspects of reality. It's just a question of accessing him. And then, I'm going to read this now. He said, why have you said that karma is beginningless? And the Babaji said, the root of all karma is the desire to perform karma, and the root cause of this desire is avidya. Avidya is forgetfulness of the truth, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. And it does not have its origin in mundane time. Rather, it originates in the tattvastha junction of the spiritual and material worlds. That's why karma does not have its beginning in mundane time. It's therefore called beginningless. It comes from another realm that's beyond time. A realm which we can't bring under a microscope. A realm which we can't bring under a microscope because it doesn't function in our laws. And then it described what is the difference between Maya and Avidya. I'm trying to catch this up. And Maya is Shakti of Krishna, meant to purify the conditioned souls. And it has two aspects, that Shakti. And one is avidya, and one is pradhan. So Maya is a Shakti of Krishna, and it's to purify, and it purifies by two aspects, avidya and pradhan. Avidya is related to the living entity, and pradhan is related to the matter. There's an energy that works on the living entity's consciousness, and there's an energy that manifests matter, to affect the living entity's consciousness. So, pradhan, the whole inert world where the jivas reside, is originated from pradhan. And actually, the division of avidya is actually avidya and vidya. Avidya binds the jiva, avidya liberates the jiva. Avidya keeps on working as long as the jiva begets Krishna, but when he becomes favorable, then this is replaced with vidya. And then it says, when vidya comes, first the jiva becomes interested in auspicious activities, and when the discrimination matures, then spiritual knowledge manifests. So vidya covers the jiva, and vidya removes that. So then what is the function of pradhan? It's just too long for this type of medium, but it's a whole description of Sankhya with all the different material elements, the objects of the senses, the sense objects, the working senses. So all these are described, how the material world, how they come from each other, how they combine to create other things. Obviously, it's a very, very elaborate system created by God. To think that it manifests by chance is a tremendous leap of faith. It would be as much more a leap of faith as if you were playing poker with someone for money and 100 times in a row he was dealt a deck of four aces. I mean, is it possible? Yes. But would you believe it? No. So is it possible by chance, by random movement of matter, that a very detailed construct of the universe that continues by chance to move in an orderly way and continues to move by chance in an orderly way and continues to move by chance in an orderly way? And it's just inconceivable. It's like if you had dealt a trillion hands of four aces, and still that would be more probable than the creation of the universe, and yet people think it's a feasible explanation that this is all by chance. So anyway, that's described. And Vrajanath inquiring, please tell me how much of the human body, whose size is 3.5 cubits, 7 spans, is occupied by the subtle cover, and how much by the gross cover? And which part of the body does consciousness, the jiva, reside? So Babaji explains, the 5 gross elements, the 5 sense objects, and the 10 senses, together comprise the gross body. The 4 elements, mind, intelligence, chitta, and ahankara, form the subtle body, or linga sharira. Sometimes chitta, usually it's bhumira apo nalo vayu, kam mano buddha, it's mind, intelligence, and false ego, comprise the subtle body. And sometimes there's the chitta. And Pradyumna told me that it's just like a pie that you can cut in different ways. But there's 3 basic functions of the subtle body. The manas, which identifies things and ascribes value to things impulsively or spontaneously based on one's past experience. Then there's the buddhi, which passes, judgment on it, and then ahankara, which is the material identity that informs everything else. And sometimes chitta is like the whole pie. The conscious jiva is the one who falsely relates to the body and objects related to the body as I and mine, and due to that misidentification has forgotten his true nature. I am this, this is mine. And somehow or other, that false relationship to the self and the false relationship to the object is the forgetfulness of Krishna. Because when you become Krishna conscious, the I is in relationship with Krishna and mine is in relationship with Krishna. I is in relationship to Krishna because I am part of Krishna, I am Krishna's servant. And mine is in relationship to Krishna because whatever I possess is his. Mine is, it's coming from Krishna. Krishna says mine. He is extremely subtle and beyond mundane space, time, and quality. Wow, the jiva is also subtle and beyond mundane space, time, and qualities. So somehow the jiva is of another dimension. I never really heard that spoken that way. But the jiva is, wow, that's amazing. The jiva is another dimension. Just as the pleasurable effect of a minute drop of Harichandan Bindu spreads all over the body when it is applied to one part, so the atomic jiva too is the knower of the whole body and the experiencer of its pains and pleasures. Because somehow, when you put a dot of chandan on one part of the whole body may feel the coolness. And somehow consciousness, the jiva somehow pervades. If the jiva performs karma and experiences pains and pleasures, where is the question of Ishvara's active involvement? I'll read that again. If the jiva performs karma and experiences pain and pleasures, where is the question of Ishvara's active involvement? So the jiva is performing the activity, and then it gets the reaction of play. So where is Ishvara's involvement? And Babaji answered, by the way, Ruti just brought me a new iPad, and I'm so relieved. The other one was just so slow and from the very beginning. Jiva is the instrumental cause, and when he performs karma, Ishvara acts as the efficient cause and arranges for the fruits of the karma that the jiva is eligible to enjoy. Ishvara also arranges for the future karma of which the jiva has been eligible. In short, Ishvara awards fruits while the jiva enjoys them. So this is also asked in the second canto, the eighth chapter. The second canto, the eighth chapter, questions by Maharaj Prickett. You know, what's the cause of the living entity's activities? And it said the first desire is by the living entity to enjoy, and the consequent desire is by God. But without the consequent desire, then nothing happens. So even if the living entity desires, and generally that puts them under the law of karma, it's God who has to sanction that. Sometimes we see in astrological charts that we see that devotees in astrological charts that it generally works. So isn't it just our karma? And due to our past activities, our karma is set our karma is set in motion. So how does that work? Well, no, we're under God. And because the law of karma is meant to purify us, even for a devotee, God may allow us to be under the law of karma. But it's not under the law of karma because everything that God is sanctioning. So it's actually a different law. He's kind of using the law of karma. But it's no longer automatic. It's under God for the devotee. And because it's under God, it can manifest in different ways. Like you do something, you should have got your head chopped off, but instead maybe you'll just cut your finger. Because after all, the whole purpose of the law of karma is to purify and to turn you towards God. So if you are turning towards God, then what is the need to be purified by the law of karma? Or what is the need to be purified by the full extent of the law of karma? So God can actually change things. How many types of buddha jivas are there? Buddha jiva means conditioned soul. So there are five kinds, and now these are going to be explained. Namely, those whose consciousness is completely covered. Achadita chaitana. Chaitana is consciousness. That's like trees and things like that. Their consciousness is completely covered. And then there are those whose consciousness is shrunken or contracted. That's sankuchita chaitana. And that's the beasts and the birds and various animals. And then there's mukalita chaitana, budding consciousness. And that's the slightly budding consciousness. And actually, the human beings fall into three categories. Slightly budding consciousness, mukalita chaitana, developed consciousness, vikashita chaitana, and those with fully developed consciousness, purna vikashita chaitana. So this is going to be described how different groups. There's a moral atheist, there's moral atheists, moral theists. There are those engaged in sadhana bhakti and those engaged in bhava bhakti. So human beings who are in different levels of consciousness. Okay, let me go back. Which jivas have completely covered consciousness? There are jivas with the bodies of trees, creepers, grass, stone, and so on, who've forgotten service to Krishna and are so engrossed in the material qualities of Maya that they no longer appear to be sentient. There's only a slight indication of their sentience through their transformation. This is the lowest stage of the jiva's fall, and this fact is corroborated by the epic stories of Ahalya, Yamala Arjuna, and Saptatala. One only reaches this stage because of some grave offense, and one can only be delivered by Krishna's mercy. Nakula and Managriva, I think it is. And they were naked before a great saint without any shame. And therefore, they were cursed to take the bodies of trees. Which jivas have contracted consciousness? Beasts, birds, snakes, fish, aquatics, mosquitoes, and various similar creatures have shrunken or contracted consciousness. The consciousness of these jivas is apparent to some degree, unlike that of the jivas in the previous group whose consciousness is completely covered. For example, these jivas perform activities such as eating, sleeping, free movement, and quarreling with others for things that they consider their property. They also show fear, and they become angry when they see injustice. However, they have no knowledge of the spiritual world. Even monkeys have some scientific understanding in their mischievous minds, for they have some idea of what will or will not happen in the future. And they also have the quality of being grateful. Some animals have good knowledge about various objects too, but despite all these attributes, they do not have a propensity for inquiring about Bhagavan, so their consciousness is contracted. So he compares that they're trees, they just transform, but they can't do anything, and there's animals that can do something. And they can actually be grateful. But still, their consciousness is contracted because they don't have the ability to inquire about Bhagavan. And that's what consciousness means. Consciousness is just like when I lead japa meditation classes and we get people in a very meditative mood hearing the mantra. We can get people in a very meditative mood hearing the mantra. You know, they can distinguish between the mind, born of the false ego, all their selfish desires, and the feelings, the spiritual feelings within their heart, and including gratitude and humility and compassion. And they can begin to feel the nature of the soul, and the purpose of yoga is actually to dwell within the soul. They can feel that. But contracted consciousness means that either you're completely unaware about that or very limitedly aware of that. And you don't have a propensity to act on it or inquire about God. This is the linchpin, though. This is the main point. We're part of God. We are meant for God's service. And the extent that we are aware of that and the extent that we actually exhibit that is the extent that our consciousness is expanding. And that's why Prabhupada calls some human beings animals. Because their consciousness is so covered that there's not even a level of control or morality. It is said in the Shastras that Maharaj Bhart still had knowledge of the name of Bhagavan, names of Bhagavan, even when he was in the body of a deer, but this is unusual. It only happens in special cases. Bharat and King Nriga had to take birth as animals because of their offenses, and they were delivered when their offenses were nullified by Bhagavan's mercy. Rajanath, which jivas have slightly budding consciousness? So there's completely covered, then consciousness is shrunken, and then mukalita chaitana, it's slightly budding. A budding consciousness, they're awakening to the soul. Babaji, conditioned jivas with human bodies fall into three categories. Those with slightly budding consciousness, mukalita chaitana, those with developed consciousness, vikashita chaitana, and those with fully developed consciousness. Purna, Vikashita Chaitana. So, three categories: budding, developed, fully developed. So there's contract, there's covered, contracted, budding, developed, fully developed. So all living entities fall within one of these five types of consciousness. Generally, the human race can be divided into five groups. Immoral atheist, one. Two, moral atheists, three. Moral theists, those who have faith both in morals and God. Four, those who are engaged in sadhana bhakti. And five, those who have engaged in bhava bhakti. Those who are knowingly atheists are either immoral or moral atheists. When a moral person develops a little faith in Ishvara, he's called a moral theist. Those who develop interest in sadhana bhakti according to the tenets of Shastra are called sadhana bhaktis. And those who have developed some unalloyed love for Ishvara are called bhava bhaktis. Both immoral and moral atheists have slightly budding consciousness. Moral theists and sadhana bhaktis have developed consciousness, and bhava bhaktis have fully developed consciousness. So moral and amoral theists, atheists, have budding consciousness. Moral theists have, and sadhana bhaktis have developed consciousness, and bhava bhaktis have fully developed consciousness. Are there any questions? Because, you know, the nature it is here, it's in the morning and I already have to go and tend to the people that are coming.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Gail. Thank you.
You know,
Earlier
on, I don't know if you'll remember this. You remember you were expressing amazement at something about the nature of the jiva? As if you were...
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what it was you were amazed about.
Well, because generally it's considered that jiva is localized within the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And here was the statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that it's beyond time and space.
But don't we always
that,
hear
because,
that?
That was something...
Because the, since the jiva
no, we
is
hear that
spirit.
The jiva is within the heart.
Yeah.
We hear
but,
it's 1/10,000 the size of the tip of a hair. We hear that it's located in the heart.
Yeah, but isn't that only
so,
because...
Yeah, we hear it's spiritual. I understand when they you know... It's not, maybe not exactly 1/10,000 the size of a hair. I can understand that. But we do understand that it's localized. It's situated within the heart. So how can it be situated in one place and be beyond space? So it's a very, very interesting concept that's hard to put one's mind around. That's all.
Yeah, actually, I thought that's what I had asked a couple of conferences ago. Anyway. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Gail. Anybody like to say hello? Okay, I haven't been here for a while.
Patty Bo.
Lose the habits. Anyway.
Patty Bo, can you hear me? This is Chaitanya Priya calling.
That's Chaitanya Priya?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Chaitanya Priya.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you.